Good morning, Charveston, Caldergarten, Charleston Rise. It's Monday, the 27th of April. And this is Adrian Dale with the Daily Podcast. And happy 51st birthday, Helen in Lincolnshire, who's always the first to hear the podcast in the morning and also the first to read the newsletter. This means she's also the first to send in corrections, and I wait nervously during my morning litter pick for the call that tells me I've dropped yet another clanger. Well, there must have been something in the water that year. Helen shares her birthday with Dame Darcy Bustle of the Royal Ballet and Strictly Come Dancing, and also with Tess Daly, also of Strictly Come Dancing. All these girls were born on the same day in 1969. I checked out other birthdays for today. Anna Chancellor, aka Duckface in Four Weddings, shares their birthday, and so does Jenna Coleman from Doctor Who. Famous men are noticeably absent from the list, apart from the King of the Netherlands, who is 53 today. Now, normally the whole of the Netherlands celebrates King's Day, and the country's coloured orange for the day. However, today it's officially cancelled because of the lockdown across Europe. Many residents in the village have had special celebrations cancelled during the lockdown. I do hope they can be relived once normality is resumed. I had some interesting feedback on yesterday's podcast. People clearly listen carefully, and comments and corrections come in all day long. I hate being wrong, but they're actually most welcome. David Hackett, a former church warden, was the first to correct me yesterday. Now, I talked about the bones of horses and men being found at the site of a former coke boiler house. Actually, this was wrong. The digging was actually required to create the first boiler house at the start of the 20th century. Previous congregants were expected to shiver in a cold church. Arthur Wright, one of the current church wardens, then contacted me to tell me about the demise of this original heating system. In 1965, old cast iron pipes still surrounded the church outside the west wall, fueled by the original coke furnace. They were terribly unsightly. Canon Roger Davison, the then vicar, contacted the chaplain of Kimbolton School and organised a band of lads to come and smash the pipes up in an act of organised vandalism. The church was then heated by some unsightly overhead electric heaters hung above the pews. Roger Davison thought these were useless too. He switched them on for 24 hours and found that the temperature in the church rose by just 2 degrees. So the parochial church council agreed that these should be ripped out too, leaving the congregation of just 6 people wearing double coats for the winter. The problem was eventually solved by Michael Fulger, who lifted the pews up and installed wiring beneath them to supply heaters at ground level. Now, David Hackett also told me that he'd found evidence of holes in the church tower caused by musket balls. So perhaps the Battle of Chelveston Hall came closer to the church than we expected. Steph Chadwick also shared a photograph of the items found during their dig, which I'll put on the newsletter today. Now, we've been debating the capacity of the churchyard for years in this village. Is the churchyard big enough for everyone who might want to be buried there? This might sound a strange, macabre topic to debate, but we did do a survey about it a few years ago. If you remember, I said a few weeks ago that this village tends to seduce you. You move here because it's cheaper than Bedfordshire, you ignore it for a few years, and then you end up being sucked in and never want to leave it, even in a box. Well, the survey revealed that large numbers of residents want to be buried in the parish. It was quite a surprise. Surely living here is preferable to being buried here. However, we suddenly had a problem. Was the churchyard big enough? So with Caroline Knight from Charleston Rise, I set about doing a detailed churchyard survey. We documented just over 320 burials in 200 or so graves. Now, given this is a 13th century church and over 700 years old, the numbers simply don't stack up. Even today, with our long lifespans, we have an average of 1.5 burials a year. So where are all the bodies? Father Grant Brockhouse was vicar at the time, and he explained that gravestones weren't actually common until the 18th century. Prior to that, all graves were marked with a simple wooden cross, which eventually disappeared. And the location of old graves was only known to the village sexton, and this was passed on verbally from sexton to sexton. Maynard Baxter, our last sexton, learned it from his father, Collis, but no one followed Maynard. All that knowledge is lost. Now, David Hackett told me yesterday that a drainage channel was once dug around the church to alleviate damp. And during this process, more graves were uncovered right up to the church walls. Some were even found under the foundations of the tower. I have to ask, what happened to these remains? Now, during the autumn last year, the church installed a new driveway and a new path to the church door. And as part of permission to do this, the authorities required us to employ an archaeologist at huge expense, present on site during the dig. At the outset, we thought this was a huge waste of time and money. But how wrong we were. Right close to the church walls, at a depth of less than 3 feet, we found undocumented graves, just as David Hackett had found. We wondered, why would you bury someone under what was clearly a pathway, so close to the surface, near the church door? Well, we studied the maps, and the archaeologist came up with the answer. The churchyard entrance we use now is not the original one. For the first few hundred years, the churchyard was actually accessed through the Momersteig's field, using the gateway directly opposite the church door. Every other space in the churchyard was clearly used as a burial ground, and the church path we've been used to has quite literally been walking on the graves of our forebears. So I'm sure you're wondering, what happens when an ancient grave is disturbed? Does lightning strike? Does the ground open up? Well, traditionally, to be honest, it's all been hushed up and everyone's turned a blind eye. Michelle has taken a different view. We don't just bury the remains under a compost heap like at the beginning of the 20th century. Instead, Michelle has reinterred the remains elsewhere in the churchyard with a dignified service and an apology for disturbing their rest. Now that's the way to do it. Our church has existed for hundreds of years at the heart of the village. Its history is revered and preserved as far as is possible, and the village's respect for our forebears is absolute. But this is a living church which must evolve with us. Now, Jenny recently spent some time in the churchyard and found it a peaceful and uplifting place. I go there every day, and even the heathen that I am understands the importance of nearly 800 years of living history in that place. Now, I don't think we'll be firing musket balls at the tower or smashing up heating pipes again soon, but I like the idea of a living and breathing church at the heart of our medieval village. Long may it continue. Thank you.